So we were discussing cases and examples which fit into basically things that we have learned for the last couple of weeks. Legabe Amir La'akum. So essentially we had discussed in length what you can say, what you can't say, how you can say. Rumiza, Sipotvarim, if you just tell it over in the story and you understand by himself. Now we're more focusing on the result of what has been said. Excuse me. So we gave a couple of examples. Let's continue. We said that you're allowed to ask a guy to do a malacha for you for if you're dealing with sick people. You're allowed to do a Amir al-Akum. You can ask a guy to do whatever is necessary, even a daraisa. A guy can do medical procedures or go buy medicine, light a candle, whatever it is, for a chodesh and sakana. When it comes to cold, so Chazal paskin that hakol chodim et latina, when it is extremely cold, people are uncomfortable, they make stire, and it affects them, so then everybody is considered halachically ill when you're dealing with situations of extreme cold, and therefore Amir al-Akum is allowed in order to alleviate a situation of extreme cold. Therefore, in cold countries, where it really gets uncomfortable, you're allowed to get a guy to turn on the heating, whether it be making a fire in the olden days or turning on central heating nowadays. It doesn't make a difference. They can do a daraisa. And for you, it's a barabonah because you're saying you're telling a guy to do it. You're allowed to do that in America because we then said that is in the case of extreme cold. If it's not extreme cold, so then you can't ask a guy. But if you have people who are sensitive to the cold, for example, children or the elderly, so then for them that becomes like extreme cold and therefore remain mutter to ask a guy. So if you have a household where there are children and the children are suffering from the cold, then again you can get a guy to turn on the heat. Once the guy turns on the heat, since it was done beheaded for the sake of the children or the elderly, then anybody else in the house may use the heat because you don't have the svara of Shema Yarbe. We explained that when the malacha that was asked of the guy is such a thing that he does it once, and it's good enough for one person, good enough for everybody, so we're not worried that he's going to increase his malacha because of the other people that are benefiting. But when there's a suspicion that what he does would need more effort in order to include other people, then the other people are not on the benefit. We gave an example, food. If a guy prepares food for people, in a way that's also on Shabbos to prepare, he's doing it because you have a sick person who needs it. You can't say, well, since he's cooking anyway, so he cooks a pot full of rice, Mamela, now everybody may partake of the rice. We say no, because there is the problem with Shem Yarbe, he might add into the pot. Instead of making one cup of rice, he'll make two cups of rice, because he sees, oh, everybody wants some. And then Mamela, he's going to do more cooking because of the fact that the healthy people are going to partake. So when you're asking a guy in a mutter way, you're asking a guy in a permitted way to do a malacha, and that malacha has a possibility that he could increase what he's doing, so then we say it's only permitted for the person who it was prepared for, who gave the heter, but other people who are collaterally involved will not be allowed to partake of what the guy did. Whereas, if what he did was a one-off melacha, and some people can enjoy, many people enjoy, it's not going to change the way he does the melacha, then all the non-involved parties may partake as well. So if he turns on the light or he turns on the heating, since it's a one-off thing, you turn on the heat. Whether there's two people in the room or four people in the room, it doesn't make a difference. You still turn on the same heat. The mela, the non-involved parties, those who don't need the heat, may still enjoy. So that was the last thing we left off with last week. And now there's another detail to add to that. That is an interesting, we spoke about a psik ratio that a goy does. If a goy is mechaven for a certain malacha, and at the time that he does the malacha, something else happened. So since his kavana was for the malacha that he was mechaven to, we're not worried about the side result, even though we benefit. Generally speaking, when a yid does something, if you do something and if you open your fridge and the light comes on, what are you interested in? You're interested in opening the fridge and getting your food. You're allowed to open your fridge and travel. So you're allowed to open your fridge, you open your fridge, you want to get your food out, and you're finishing the close of the fridge. But it happens to be that it's impossible to open the fridge without the light coming. That's called psikratia. Psikratia is when you do one action which might be mutter, but a secondary action happens at the same time and it's unavoidable, so then you can't do the first action because we're worried about the second action taking place. When it comes to a goy, we're going to say that's different, that a goy may do for you an action even though there is a secondary action taking place. So you can't ask them to do the psikresha so that you can enjoy it. You can't ask them to open the fridge so that you can have light. That's, excuse me, that's like asking them to turn on the light. But if you ask them to open the fridge because you want the fridge open and now the light goes on, that is a different. So the example given in Halacha is you have in the cold countries, this is what was happened in Europe, the winter was freezing cold, and they made a nice big fire on Friday afternoon. The problem is, as the time Shabbos morning came, some 12 to 14 hours later, that fire was out. The house was freezing and no one could get out of bed. It was freezing cold. So you hired a shiksa. It was a known thing that every town had their Shabbos goy, who went round from house to house lighting the fire. And that way the house would warm up and would be warm the rest of the day. There's even a discussion, can you get the goy to come back a second time in the afternoon to light the fire a second time? It depends how cold it is, depends how long it is, how much you're suffering. But it could be in very cold countries where a single fire lit in the morning is not going to last and be sufficient for the whole day. You can get them to come back towards afternoon as well to light a second fire. So they had a situation where the goy came in and lit the fire. They lit, where did they light the fire? Usually in the winter room. Their houses were built. It's an interesting, I've seen houses like this when I was in Switzerland. They still have old houses that were built in the 16th and 17th centuries, but they're still built in the same style. Is you had a kitchen and you had a winter room, and the winter room had a oven inside it, which was not used for cooking, it was used for warmth. So you used the kitchen one for cooking, and Mamela, it also warmed up the kitchen and the room above it. And because that two warm rooms in a house wasn't enough, you had a separate room, the winter room. And that's where people lived. They lived in that room. They bathed in that room. That's why that room up here, Halacha, is part of from a mezuzah, because they, in the winter, they bring the tub that they bathed in into that room because that was the only warm room in the house. And they slept in the room above that. You had a trap door that went up from the above the stove. You had a stairs that were built usually around the stove, led through a trap door into the room above, and that was where people slept. So you either slept on top of the kitchen or you slept on top of the winter room, and during the day you were downstairs, you were either cooking or you were in the winter room to stay warm. So it's called in Halacha, it's called the Beis HaChorev, to the winter room, and you have the Tanur Beis HaChorev, you have the oven of the Beis HaChorev, which is a oven for heat purposes. But because it was a source of heat, it also had a little hole in it where you could put some food in order to keep the food warm, because it was another source of heat. We're burning up fuel, you might use it efficiently. So what they did was that when the goy came in the morning to light the fire in the Tanur Beis HaChorev, she would take the pot that had been left on the stove in the kitchen. By now it had gone cold because the fire had gone out and it was pretty cold. She put the pot on top of the winter stove and lit the fire in the winter stove. Now, what she's lighting the fire in order to warm the house. The side benefit is that the chalent is going to be reheated and the mela will be edible when you get back from shul to eat it. Is that mutter? And the answer is yes, because what she's doing is she's lighting the fire to warm the house. This sikresha, that at the same time that she lights the fire, the pot is going to heat up. So we're going to say that's mutter over there. We're talking about where the food is fully cooked. So at least you don't have a problem of visual, you don't have a problem of chazara perhaps. And therefore we allow the goy to put this pot on top of the winter stove. The condition is that the pot must be placed on the stove before she lights. Because if she lights the stove first and now you've got a heat source, now you're just asking her to put a pot on a heat source. That's just like asking, hey, put the pot on the stove. That we don't allow. We don't allow the mirror to go put the pot on the stove. But if you put the pot on something cold, and now for a different reason, she's warming up the cold surface, and then, derech agav, the pot gets hot. That's the psikresha which we're going to allow. How does that play out? So, we don't have a Tanur Beis HaChorev, we don't have the goy coming by to light the fires for us. We have, if we were to live in cold countries, which here in Beit Shemesh is very hard to consider a cold climate. But if we were to live there, we have electronic and electric heating with timers and all the rest, and so automated. But how would it come out? It would come out that if for whatever reason the heat was not set and you needed to call a goy in to turn the heat on, you could ask the goy to take your pot and put it on top of the radiator, not on top of the stove, put it on top of the radiator. And then when they light up when they turn on the central heat, so the radiator is going to get hot, and your trunk will also get hot. So that follows through a practical example that would be allowed to handle. Or another example is if you have a platter, an electric platter, if the electric platter is often cold and you have a goy available, you can tell the goy to put the pot on the platter. Even if the platter now is cold and later can go on, the placing of the pot on the platter is not often to ask the goy to do it so long as the platter is off. Now, later it's going to go on. So that's a indirect result of what they've done, and we're not worried about it. You can't ask them to turn on the platter because then that would be like asking them to light it to warm the food up. Not like here, where they, not like the case of the heating where they're turning on the fire for the heat of the house and the food is there. Fun. So more examples, if a goy's job is to wash kelim, to wash the dishes on Moshe Shabbos, and he wants to do them during the day so that he can have off on Moshe Shabbos, you may let him do it. You don't have to stop him from doing it, even though he might have to heat up water or turn on lights. That is all purely for his own sake, and therefore permissible. Spoken this out before, just giving more examples of fit into these cases. And of course, we've said that if he turns on the light to wash the dishes, now the yid wants to come, you do something in this room and use the light, that's fine, because when the light is turned on, it's turned on for the sake of the goy, so the yid can have a hanaf of it afterwards. Obviously, he mustn't be there right at the beginning, because right at the beginning, the goy will have it in his mind when he turns on the light. But if he, after he turns the light, you come in, that's fine. Also, you can actually tell him not to turn it off, we said. But if he heats up water in order to wash the dishes, you can't use the remaining water, because if he knows you're going to be using the leftover water, he might heat up more than he needs to include you. We don't. So here you've got, again, like we said before, when there's a single malacha that he does and the amount of people that can gain from it is irrelevant to the effort put into the malacha, so then it's fine. The light he turns off, if he uses someone else's, there's no problem. But the water, if he discovers that you're using it, he might put more water in, so then we can just guess to use the water. If a guy is washing dishes in your house and he wants to load the dishwasher, it is preferable to not let him use the dishwasher, not because he's not allowed to turn it on, but because the dishwasher makes noise, and we don't want these noises to come out of our house. It's a separate sugya of Abshamil, so we've spoken about in the past, just briefly say it again, and that is that the halacha talks about having a water mill which runs automatically. Can you let your water mill load the food hopper with grain and let the mill run and let the grain go through all by itself? The whole thing is automated. So you can get it put into action on Friday, and by Monday Shabbos you'll have your kilos of flour ground. And the answer is no, because people think that you are actually running your mill on Shabbos, and therefore there's a Maris Ayin, it's called Abshamil, so that makes a noise, and therefore you cannot have a noise generating a system running. However, if you talk about a grandfather clock, you're allowed to wind up a grandfather clock on Friday afternoon and let it, you're allowed to wind up a grandfather clock yourself on Friday afternoon. Excuse me. And let it chime the whole Shabbos. Why is there some of that? Because there, we've said, everybody knows that these clocks get wound up once every 24 hours. So you wound it up before Shabbos. In fact, it goes ding-dong on the hour. People don't think that you were standing there and winding it up now. They know you wound it up in advance. Therefore, those things which are understood and expected, that this is what people do, you're allowed to let them run into Shabbos, even though they make noise. But those things that are not common and they don't do, then you're not allowed to let them run into Shabbos. The dishwasher is considered as something which most people don't switch on Friday and run into Shabbos. And therefore, someone hears a dishwasher running in your home, he thinks you activated on Shabbos, especially if it was Friday and ran into Shabbos. Look, they think you turned it on too late. But if they hear them on Shabbos afternoon, they think, oh, what happened? So you can't have such noisy items running. If you have a very silent one and it's in a room and no one can hear what's going on, we can be mekel, because even though generally on a Maris Ayin we say that in private you can't do Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin is an Isur, and it's an Isur wherever you are, irrelevant of whether people know about it or not. But that depends on what type of Maris Ayin. If it's a Maris Ayin that you might have done a Rabbanon, then you can't do that you might have done a Daraisa, then you can't do it in private. So for example, hanging up laundry on Shabbos, you have wet clothing, so you're not allowed to hang them up on Shabbos on the washing line. You can hang them in places where you don't normally hang wash. You hang it on the back of a door, you hang it on the back of a chair or something like that, fine. Not that you did laundry, your clothing got wet for whatever reason. But hanging on the washing line is a Maris Ayin. People think you washed it today. If I have an indoor washing line and I'm a bachelor and I live all by myself and I have a washing line that hangs over my bar, we're going to say that's also because the Isur of Maris Ayin applies even in private. I'm hanging there, I'm the only one who's going to see it. It's in my bathroom, and no one has a view in, the window is closed, no one can see in, whatever. Nevertheless, when it comes, because the chashash is a daraisa, if you did laundry on Shabbos, so therefore even betzina, even b'chadri chadorim is important enough, even in your own private place where no one can see in, it's still off. Whereas, if the Isur we're dealing with is one that is a drabonon, in other words, the what people will suspect you of that you've done a drabonon, so then we're going to be more makel that you can do it with chadri chadorim, you can do it with private. So the allowing a machine to make noise could be is only a Maris Ayin drabonon, and therefore there are people who say that if you do it with sina, it would be mutter. The question is, how quiet is your machine and how much noise does it make? It's how much people be aware of it. Washing machines, for example, are not, although they don't make that much noise, but they vibrate, it's not available that people can hear what's going on, and therefore there would be much more room to machmir than on a dishwasher. But then these days, Shmuel Shabbos says not to use your dishwasher on Shabbos because of the problem of Abshamil, so that means not having to work by time switch and not having to take going turn it on either. It's interesting, if I'm on the topic, I just mentioned to the Chagav that there's an interesting shaila whether you're allowed to have your water sprinklers, your watering system running on Shabbos. If it's the Israeli dripper system, no one's going to know when it's dripping, when it's not dripping, the chayim is no problem, no noise involved. But if it's a sprinkler and the spray goes up and it, you know, waters the lawn, so yeshoim. Some say that by now everybody knows that watering systems are automated and you set them beforehand and they go without a problem. And some say, no, this is not so clear and it's not known by everybody and therefore you should be more machmir not to have the sprinklers going. Drippers, probably yes, but sprinklers. Another example that has become common is to allow your air conditioning to run. Many times you walk out on Shabbos and you hear someone's compressor running. You don't ever think twice, oh, someone just turned on his air conditioning on Shabbos. And those compressors can make quite a substantial noise, and they're very noticeable. Nevertheless, we're going to say that this is something common. Everybody knows that air conditioning for Shabbos, even on the whole time, or you put on time switch, but it's known, and therefore there's no option else involved. Okay, some more halachas to do with going to halachas for us. You're not allowed to bring your laundry to the laundromat on Shabbos. You can't give it to a goy to wash on Shabbos, even if you know that he's not going to do it today, he's for tomorrow, the day after, or whenever. Nevertheless, the delivery of the laundry to the goy is awesome. If you delivered your laundry to the goy before Shabbos and it was ready on Shabbos, and now he has a delivery service. We have a laundry here in Ramah Beit that offers that, and then will deliver the clean laundry to your house. Lo Yitzur. Here it's not a Zidin, they don't work on Shabbos, and it's not Shabbos. But Lo Yitzur, you live in a city where you drop off the stuff at the laundry sometime during the week. You give them enough time to wash it, and then a couple of days later, they come and they deliver it to your house. Now it comes out that they're delivering on Shabbos. You gave it on Monday, they could have finished it on Tuesday and brought it on Wednesday. But for whatever reason, they delayed, they brought it on Shabbos. Or you gave it on Friday and were expecting it on Monday, and you didn't ask for them to do it any faster or quicker, which is better. But they had no work, and they had a day where they felt like looking through the night, Friday night, and Shabbos morning they're doing their deliveries, they want to go on holiday the next day, and have a backlog. Knocks on your door Shabbos morning with your fresh laundered suit. What do you do? The answer is that you're allowed to let him bring that soup into your house. You should not take it from his hands. Like the boy said, whenever something moves in or out of your house, you should let the goy do the full malacha. He's doing the akira, the ranacha, the picking up and the putting it down. So the goy should put it down somewhere. You're allowed to let him put it down. You're allowed to let him bring it in. Don't take it from his hands. But what you have to make sure is you don't discuss with him what it costs. You cannot pay him for it. If it was a cash on delivery, you got a problem because you cannot give him the money. You can't even show him your wallet to help himself with the money. You can't even tell him please add it to the account or meaning and make a cheshbon. You can say, I'll pay you after Shabbos. That you can say. But you can't say, remember it happened last week and I still owe you, so now I owe you for two suits. And you brought one suit now, there's one last suit, so now you're making a cheshbon. Ah, you brought one, I owe you one, so now I owe you two. Making a cheshbon would be awesome. What about wearing the suit? So we say that generally speaking, you should not wear the suits. However, if you have nothing else to wear, your good luck. The cleaners knocked on your door on Shabbos morning because Friday night you were at the table and someone spilled something all over your suit and you're stuck. Oh, before you went down to shul the next morning, bang, there's a knock at the door and cleaners delivered your suit. So you have nothing else to wear. So then we say even if you brought it through Rosh Hashanah, even if you had to come from out of town and you would be the tum, in a case of necessity, then you're allowed to wear the suit that was washed before Shabbos but delivered on Shabbos. Another thing that's mutter to ask the goy, if you have dust on your clothing in a way that is asked on Shabbos, there are a light dusting could be done, but if you might put on it on a brush or something more than a light dusting, which you're not allowed to put on Shabbos, but you can ask the goy to do it for you. In particular, if it happens to be that you cannot walk around like this because you are a dignified person and you don't want something on your garment undignified, so then again, that's another common abrius, and it's another headache to ask the goy to do it for you. So if you have mud, it was raining Friday night, you walked home and some mud got stuck in your clothing and dried and hard, so to take it off on Shabbos is a problem of token, but you got to crush it up in order to get it off. You can ask the goy to break it up. An interesting one, I don't know how practical it is today, it might be practical in different formats, but you, I can think of an example. In the olden days, you have a class to go to on Shabbos, or do you don't want to have a class, so you ask one of the other students to please keep you in mind, and when he takes notes for the lesson, tell them, write it on carbon paper. And that way, you will have your own set of notes, and today, very simple, you ask one of the students, are you taking notes? Great, after Shabbos, I'll photocopy them. But there was a time where photocopying wasn't available, and recording and all the rest also wasn't so available, and rather you just asked your fellow students to write his notes on carbon paper and an automatic copy. That you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to ask him to write on carbon paper because the copy is for you, so he's doing the writing for you, so even though you haven't been at after Shabbos, even though essentially he's taking the notes for himself, and then to ask him for the notes after is not a problem. The second copy writing for you, so he's doing one action, very interesting, he's doing one action of writing, and he's writing for himself. It's coming out of two papers, and the upper papers for him, the lower papers for you, that's awesome. If you need something bought, and you can't have time to buy it, you can give away the money to go buy it. Now, if it turns out that he's going to go shopping for you on Shabbos, you don't have to worry about it, he can choose a time where he can go himself, as long as he's not forced to go on Shabbos, either because you ask him to go on Shabbos, that would be forbidden, or because the store, the market, wherever he's going to, is only open on Shabbos. If the only time that this thing is sold is on Shabbos, so then you cannot ask a guy to go for you to buy it, because it's like telling him, please buy it on Shabbos, and that you may not do. If, very interesting, if you have a market, like a flea market or something, that sets up on Shabbos and once during the week, and even though on Shabbos is the big one, when every stand is around and when the big crowds are there, and that's when everybody goes. And there's a little one that happens on a Wednesday. Yeah, it's like you can picture these things. It's a little one on a Wednesday. Since the item can be bought on a Wednesday, the fact that he chooses to go on Shabbos, even though that's the day that's going to be more available, or it might be easier to get, but since it is available on Wednesday, then it's not like you're asking to buy that on Shabbos. He then buys on Shabbos, not a problem. If you have a situation where the only way you can get this is on Shabbos, so then the way to get a goy to buy something for you is not to buy it for you. What I mean by that is you tell him to buy it for himself. You can even lend him the money. You tell him, here's 100 shekels, please go buy me XYZ. And you can use go buy this for yourself. Please go buy this for yourself. But don't worry, you won't lose out, because the Moshe Shabbos are going to buy it back from you. You can explain that all too. You can lend him the money, he will go purchase it on Shabbos, but what must be done is that he purchases it for himself. It's his. Nachkamina would be probably that if it was hit by lightning, so who lost out? It was his item, and he still owes you the money that you lent to him. But so even though it looks pretty much like he's doing it for you, but since no, he's buying it for himself. He borrows money from me, buys it for himself, let the Shabbos I come, and I buy it off him, and then he pays back the money, and then it's clean and fine, and I've got my item. That is to have a storefront which has a very clear Jewish name. You should not have a Goyish entry on the desk because of Maris Ayin, or if you have an expo, you have exhibition, and you have a stand at the exhibition, even if you're not doing any business, but to have a woman, not a woman, a Goy standing at the stand on Shabbos would be a Maris Ayin, that they think that you hired him to look after your stand and do business on Shabbos, and therefore you should not have a Goy man the Jewish desk over Shabbos. We've got a few more minutes. Go on. What about the postal services? Obviously here now to sell the postal services are going to be cautious that it's Yidden who run it, and hopefully they're not working on Shabbos, and if you put a letter into the mailbox on a Friday or something like that, depending on when the next collection is and all the rest of it. Yeah, no, so as far as I know, there's no work done on Shabbos, so you don't have to worry about this. It's more of a question of chutzlaris. So, in Eretz, since anyway, it would all be asur on Shabbos. But in chutzlaris, it's going around the postal services. The question is this considered as asking a goy to do something for you? So you want to put a letter into the mailbox on a Friday, and you know that emptying time of the box is going to take place on Shabbos. And the sorting of the process and moving forward all takes place on Shabbos, and it's going to be delivered, say, on Sunday. So what is the din about putting some postbox on Erev Shabbos, where work's going to be done on Shabbos? Essentially, we're going to say that as long as there's no time limit involved, if you put a regular stamp on a letter and you put it into the mailbox on a Friday, and it's going to be delivered on Shabbos because, they have an efficient postal service, that's not a problem. They're just in a hurry to get it out because that's how the postal service works. But if you put a stamp on it that says priority, and in this country, the priority means 24-hour delivery, so then putting it into the box on Friday is asked to deliver on Shabbos. That will be a problem. So if you're going to use a FedEx system or something like that, or Telegram or something like this, where your markbid or the system is set up in a way that your markbid should arrive within a designated time, and that time is going to fall out and then use Shabbos time, then it would be a problem. There are heterim, and therefore in a case of extreme need, one can ask the child to get a heter, if because the postal service works anyway without you, and they're just adding, you know, there's 1,000 letters that are moving from place A to place B, yours just added into it. So they are heterim, but the chachila one should not put a letter into the post box with a priority request on it on a Friday, meaning that they're going to have to work on it on Shabbos. If the postman brings your post on Shabbos, what do you do with it? Don't take it into your hand, but you can allow him to put it down. And if it's a registered letter, you can't sign for it. But if he writes down that it's been handed over, it's received, that's not your problem. You don't have to worry about it making any notes that are for his own purposes. If he didn't put it in your front door, but he put it into your post box, your mailbox, if that's within the area, there's no problem of carrying, then if it's that type of letters you're allowed to carry, it's a separate story. What letters, obviously, is it filled with most stuff in your car, but it's a letter that might have important information. Also not so practical today that people send important information in regular snail mail, but that's how that offer was. Then you could actually bring the letter in. If you need to read the letter because you're worried about what's written inside, so then you can somehow let the goy know that you can't read the letter with it closed, and if he understands, he can then open it up for you. Can't do an amira because opening the letter would be a problem. It would be an Issa Shabbos, and therefore you can't ask where it is for you. But if he does it on his own accord because you've explained to him circumstances, I can't read letters that are closed. He looks at me and says, well, open it. Well, I don't open letters to Chubbs. And you haven't told him anyway, go do it for me. He understands. He opens it, and that's considered secret warrant. But I'm going to be mutter. If a package arrived on Chubbs, if there was no fader, if no one was particularly requested that a dafka should be delivered today, you sent the package and could have taken a week, could have taken 10 days, could have taken 2 weeks, whatever the case may be. Whatever it took, it took. It happened to be. It was delivered on Chavez. Inside was a nice yummy bar of chocolates, so you're allowed to have that bar of chocolate because you said that it wasn't considered brought dafka for you today. It was, yes, it was brought for you, but the postal man was coming anyway into town, and it could have brought it tomorrow or yesterday. In fact, it brought it on Chavez. He was having a direct hanok for what he did for you today. Okay, let's just get in one more hanok. A little bit complicated. They say that it's not going to fit into the 2 minutes that we have. It's about reading newspapers and Chavez. So first we have to discuss whether it's mutter also to read a newspaper. But if you're subscribed to a daily paper that's delivered on Chavez, can you read the newspaper? If it's that newspaper you may read. Now, from the point of view that it was delivered on Chavez, we're going to say that it depends on where it was printed and how it was brought. So I think I'm going to leave it for next week to discuss the individual cases. And then hopefully next week we will finish off this section of Amir La'akum. And maybe we'll fill in some halakhos of Pesach. Because next week will be the last share before Yom Tov. We're going to go on to Venus Manim after that. So we'll maybe mention a couple of halakhos and have to do the fact that this year, Erev on Friday, Yom Shabbos. And therefore we have slightly different to take into account. And after we come back, after this year, we'll start a new section of Pikuach Nefesh and Refuah. With that, we wish everybody a wonderful, successful day.
Thank you.